The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
And good morning. Happy Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Join the conversation. Like the man said, 770-5633-770-KMED. The email bill at billmyersshow.com. Hope you're doing well today. Had a great couple of days off. Ended up having Valentine's Day. Took my lovely sweetie Linda day before her birthday. Saturday was her birthday. And ended up going to a nice meal. And then we ended up heading over to the Alexander Tutinov program along with Dr. Hall, dueling pianos. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful performance. And just really enjoyed it. That was a great start to my long four-day weekend. And then yesterday was just kind of reading news, drinking coffee, playing Yahtzee, things like that, doing nothing particularly important, but certainly some strange news around here. Like, we had this situation in which some people abandoned, allegedly, we have to say allegedly, right, that sort of thing. But there was a crash yesterday on the railroad here in Southern Oregon, Central Oregon and Pacific. A train hits an abandoned truck. In rural Gold Hill is where this ended up happening. And the 911 folks here in Jackson County, I got a report about 9:30 yesterday morning. Train crashes into a truck parked onto the tracks. And it got into the tracks apparently from a dirt road. And this was near the Gold Ray Road area, okay? Nobody heard on this one. And I guess there are some people in trouble, though. They have identified 45-year-old Kenneth Lutke, 78-year-old Caroline Allen, both of White City, as suspects. And they're charged with trespass, criminal mischief, reckless endangering. And Allen also got an additional charge of driving while suspended. So I guess they decided to just take the truck and go out there on the, out there in the back roads until they got to the train track. And then you just parked it by the train track, I guess. Well, the trespassing aspect, people would say, why would it be trespassing? Well, it's because the railroad tracks are private property. Yeah, I know a lot of people don't seem to realize that. It's actually private property. And I know I've walked the tracks. I've done things like that forever and ever and ever. And usually nobody hassles you. But technically, if they really want to get in your face, they could, about it. So that is what happened. That was our big one here. A mishap in Toronto yesterday, though. This was this made the national news. You saw the picture of the Delta plane upside down? Yeah, after it crashed and flipped. In Toronto, it was actually flying. Let's see, is actually coming from Minneapolis, yeah. And one person listed critical with non-life-threatening injuries, though, is going to be okay. Seven other people suffering moderate to mild injuries, and they're calling it a miracle. And it is fascinating, though, how NBC News ended up responding to this. I wanted to play this for you. It's their one of their senior correspondents, Tom Costello. Now, remember. Took off from Minneapolis, landing in Toronto under Toronto control. And this is how NBC News ended up reporting the plane crash.
I did want to, underscore to pick up on the conversation you were just having, though, in terms of the recent string of aviation incidents, Tom. This is going to yet again raise the concern about FAA staffing, air traffic control staffing. Now, this is a Canadian air traffic control tower, and this is under Canadian authority once it crosses the border. And yet, as you know, there has been this talk about maybe staff cuts at the FAA as a part of President Trump's effort to trim down the federal workforce. And yet, as you also know, the FAA has been complaining for years that they are understaffed in critical job positions, especially air traffic control. I was having a conversation with somebody today about whether air traffic control in America is being affected by the staff. Cuts so far, not to their knowledge, and yet other positions related to maintaining critical equipment appear to have been cut. So this is going to feed into all of these recent incidents, and the safety of the total air traffic system is going to be very much a part of the conversation as we go forward, at least on this side of the country, of the border, I should say.
So NBC News's take was that, we can't prove that it's Trump's fault, but it's Trump's fault because of FAA call. FAA cuts, rather. That was. What do you think about that, huh? What do you think about that? Well, yeah, we know it was an American plane, but it was in Canadian airspace. But obviously, you know, it's going to feed into this. No, NBC News is feeding into this as part of it. The preliminary figuring what they think happened with the plane is that, by the way, there had been some really bad weather in Toronto and lots of snow over the weekend. And they had had some runways closed, and they were trying to make up flights and trying to get a lot of people in and out of there. And the weather was really bad when the Delta plane was landing. And the theory at this point is that severe gusts ended up taking the plane and twisting it to the point where, I guess, not having seen video of the actual crash itself, but, flipping, the wingtip ends up grabbing, because of the severe wind, it grabs, and then you can flip the plane. That sort of thing. But fortunately, everybody's okay. And the one person that was more seriously injured, it seems to be okay, too. But that's all President Trump. President Trump now controls the weather at Toronto's airport and also the response of the pilot to the weather at Toronto's airport. But just absolutely fascinating how the... how NBC News, and I'm sure ABC News and CBS probably had similar things. Well, this is feeding into the problem, okay? A little bit closer to home, Providence agreeing to come back to bargaining with nearly 5,000 striking nurses. This in a release from the Oregon Nurses Association. This has been dragging on for a while. And mediation is going to take place today and tomorrow. This, according to the Oregon Nurses Association. And they're saying more than a week after nearly 5,000 frontline nurses from 8 Prov hospitals resoundingly voted no on a tentative contract, Providence agreeing to come back to negotiations. So they've been on strike for 39 days, by the way. I had a person, I don't know if they work at Providence or whatever it is, they left a note on my, or a message on my phone, and they were claiming that I told a falsehood or that I told an untruth about the Providence Oregon Nurses Association deal. And I might get more into this at some point. They were claiming, because I was saying that Providence has been losing money and that they've lost money 10 out of the last 12 quarters providing medical care. And they say that's not true. Providence has, I'm just paraphrasing what this person said, Providence has $8 billion, $10 billion, or $8 billion in the savings account. And that's true. There is like $8 billion in their investment account, roughly speaking, give or take a billion, when you're talking a lot. And that sounds like a lot of money. But one of the only things that saved Providence in losing 10 to 12, losing money on medical care over the last 10 out of 12 quarters is because of money that was produced by the investment fund. So the way I downloaded their financial reports. And maybe I can get somebody who understands those reports better than I do. I don't claim to be a green eyeshade kind of accountant type. But the way that I read the Providence financial reports is that the money from the investment fund generated enough money to be able to make up for the fact that Providence loses money on providing medical care. That's the way it looks like. And see, the way the Oregon Nurses Association is looking at this is that there's $8 billion in the investment account. So that should be going to the nurses and doctors. No, it's a foundation. It's like the investment fund. This is something which is there to provide for Providence long term. It's kind of like the Providence 401k, if you want to look at it that way, another way. And I would imagine that capital expenditures like new buildings or new equipment that needs to be replaced, things like that may get paid out of that. The fact of the matter is, though, is that Providence, and I don't know about Asante's situation. Who knows what it's going to be like over at Asante, given the nurses, the fentanyl nurse trial and all of the lawsuits about that and whether they have enough insurance to really be able to cover that as a going concern. I can't speak to that right now, but when you actually look at the books, when it comes to Providence actually providing medical care, it tends to lose money on it. And there's a lot of reasons for it. frankly, you also have a lot of bum and illegal alien indigent care that that comes into the Providence system. And there's very little, if any, money that comes attached with those individuals. Well, that money has to come from somewhere. And some of it got padded, I would imagine, from the investment fund, the way it looks like from my reading of the books. But the investment fund is like the seed corn of Providence. And it's not and to take money out of the investment fund, the seed corn, and pay it to nurses or give it to suppliers or anything like that is kind of defeating the purpose of having a savings account. The idea is that you can't overpay your help. Now, I know that you have to pay your help fairly in order to get them in there, but I don't think that I was telling an untruth when I said that Providence, just like Providence has said, has lost money 10 out of 12 times. Of the last 12 out of the last 12 quarters, they've lost money 10 times out of it. And a lot of it is indigent care, providing care for the community like that, which is what they do. And you also have the situation in which, let's say you have someone coming in from Oregon Health Plan. Oregon Health Plan pays, if I recall correctly, about 55% of what the medical procedures are actually being charged for other people. Now, I may be stating this inelegantly, but the state of Oregon doesn't pay what it actually costs to treat someone at Providence, or probably for Asante for that matter, and various other doctors. They pay less. I don't know of any other business that that allows you to do this, in which the hospital says or the doctor says, this is how much I charge, and then the state of Oregon says, well, this is how much you'll get. You know, that kind of thing. But that does seem to be the way it is. I mean, wouldn't you love to be able to go into the grocery store and just say, hey, you know, I know that ribeye is $17.99 a pound, but I'd like to pay $11.99 a pound. Or maybe $10 a pound, and that's all you're going to get. Boy, wouldn't that be great. So to the person who, by the way, did not leave his phone number, but he was saying that I was lying about it. No, I don't think. I don't believe I am, because Providence, technically looking at their books, loses money on providing a lot of medical care. And they backfill it with investment income earned from that big savings account. So the fact that they have a big savings account doesn't mean that big savings account means we automatically give the nurses everything that they want and everything's all fine. You have to look out for the longer term. And I think that's what those investment funds are all about. Although it sounds like a lot of money, but Providence is a big system too. And if you've looked at the price of a CT machine or something, then there are big expenses involved in all this too. All right. So there we go. That's it. Nurses and Providence back at the table today and tomorrow. Hopefully they can hammer out something that both sides are happy with. But just saying that they have a big savings account, hence we give it to the nurses. No, that's not the way the system works. Not if you're running your company responsibly. You have to keep reserves and you have to keep... Well, it's just kind of like, you can even look at Jackson County, for instance. I don't know what their reserves are right now, but they have pretty good reserves in Jackson County. We've talked about that in the past. I haven't checked the budgeting on that recently. But they'll say, well, why do we need to go to the taxpayers to get a new jail? Because we have enough money in there to probably build a jail, or at least improve the jail, do something like that. And it's like, yes, that's absolutely true. There may be enough money to technically build a jail or get pretty close to it, but of course you have a reserve in there in order to, well, if you have emergencies and you have something that has to be done, you get the big earthquake and you got to have some money from it. Okay, there. I mean, just as an example, there has to be some certain reserves in there. But just because Jackson County may technically have enough reserves to build a new jail, or at least a pretty good addition to a jail or whatever, however you want to call it, doesn't mean that there's money to run the jail, because then you have to hire a lot of people. Those are continuing expenses. Building the jail would be like a one-time expense. And that's kind of what, when I look at Providence savings account. And by the way, I'm not saying that I'm a homer for Providence. I'm just talking about, I see both sides of this issue. The nurses want the absolute most amount of money and the most amount of help as possible with the minimum amount of work, like any other unionized workforce, or any other workforce for that matter. Nobody wants to do more than they can, and they'll couch it in safety and all the rest of it, and I get it. And the company will cry poor. I'm not saying that the company is poor, but when you're losing money on your core mission, 10 out of 12 quarters paying for the medical care. And a lot of this is due to the reimbursement rates along with the rest of it. And a lot of bums show up in the emergency room for free, along with the illegal aliens and all the rest of it. You can see how we have irresistible forces meeting up with immovable objects over at Providence and the Oregon Nurses Association. Just saying, all right? Balance, balance, balance. Hope they get that figured out. 626 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Making America's appliances great again. Energy, too, for that matter. Steve Malone will be talking about that. Dr. Robert Malone will also join me after 7 o'clock. Of course, you know, he's a big guy within the COVID world. It was one of those truth tellers during COVID. And we're going to talk about RFK Jr.'s being confirmed late last week over at HHS and what that portends. Former Josephine County Commissioner Herman Bertschiger, of course, former state senator. We're going to talk with him about DOGE and various other things. A lot of DOGE news this morning, including, boy, a lot of people on Social Security that should be dead. There's nothing hinky about that, is there? Nah, couldn't be. This is the Bill Meyer Show. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from...
with Patriot Electric, and I'm on KMED.
629 KMED and 99.3 KBXG. Governor Kotek yesterday ended up putting a pause on the wildfire hazard map. So the wildfire hazard map, and actually, any further agency action is how it's being reported on the state's new wildfire hazard map until the legislature decides what to do with it. In other words, keep the heat on them, folks. And if you have not filed your wildfire agency map appeal or whatever it is, get that in. Continue to keep flooding them. And that is the main thing. It would appear that the wildfire map may be circling the drain. Now, I know that the Republicans in the state legislature are trying to kill that right now. They had a press conference yesterday, Statesman's Journal reporting this, laying out plans to repeal the risk map released earlier this year, and the stricter building codes and the requirements that it places on about 100,000 properties in the name of wildfire prevention. And they were touting Senate Bill 678 that would eliminate the map. That is Noel Robinson's bill, from what I understand. Now, the issue, though, is that do they have the votes? I don't know. But the one thing about the wildfire map irritation is that this could be more of a bipartisan hating on issue than we may think. We can't say for sure. But, you know, not everybody that's having their property ripped up and down one side or the other in a wildfire risk hazard map of high is a Republican. Not all of them. And there are some Democrats probably upset about this, too. And I would imagine that State Senator Golden has been getting a pretty strong behind-the-scenes talking to. And I think that's what's going on here. So the state of Oregon may blink once again on the wildfire hazard map. But that does not mean that you go to sleep and think that everything will be taken care of. In other words, we'll take care of this after the legislative session is over. So you make sure and get your stuff in there if you are a rural property owner, okay? Don't go to sleep on us, okay? Don't go to sleep on yourself. I mean, I don't have a dog in this fight. I mean, my property's not that way, but maybe yours is. Good morning, KMED. This is Bill. Who's this?
This is Margaret from Central Point.
Hey, Margaret, how are you doing this morning? What's up?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thankfully, you're back.
No, it's great. And, it's good to be back. How are you?
I'm great. I was wondering if we could get Robert Malone's opinion on the H5N1 avian flu debacle, because they're thinking now they want to try, the FDA wants to try to vaccinate chickens, and they are going to make their own natural food herd immunity if they just leave them alone and stop killing off all the chickens.
Okay, well, I'll ask him about that, okay? We'll do that.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you very much.
And like I said, he's a virologist, you know, of great renown, so he's certainly someone I can ask. I think I can probably trust his opinion, I hope, right?
I think so. Thank you very much, Bill.
All right, thanks, Margaret. 632 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Yeah, we'll talk with Dr. Malone here a little bit more than a half hour from now. There's some other things we have going on here. Rock Valley Times reporting this morning, more than 150 protesters holding signs, chanted together, made their presence known in downtown Medford yesterday on President's Day. They were protesting President Donald Trump, his administration's policies and staff. similar rallies held around the entire country. They had signs like "Send Elon Musk to Mars," and "This is what democracy looks like," protesting Doge, and cutting funding for federal grants in multiple federal agencies targeting the LGBTQ plus community. Yeah. With a Trump executive order banning transgender citizens from serving in the military. I would just raise the issue here gently with the 150 protesters. I'll paraphrase Barack Obama's administration. We won, you lost, deal with it. This is the Bill Myers Show at 633.
The best of Southern Oregon Magazine.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Steve Malloy joins me. He's with the energy, environment, and public health expert over at, what is the official? There are a number of things. There's stevemalloy.com. There's junkscience.com. Yeah. You're everywhere. You're everywhere right now, Steve. But tell me about energy and legal.
Look, people can just follow me on X at junkscience. I'm with the Energy and Environment Legal Institute, but people know me from X.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I just wanted to say that I think that you have a portrait of yourself in the attic there someplace. I mean, you're very youthful. Very youthful photo you got there. Good stuff,
Well, the portrait is.
Good looking guy. Hey, Steve, I wanted to dig into this. Like I said, you were talking about all this, these energies and the junk science things back before it got cool. Now it's become really cool. But I wanted to find out, what are we looking at with making appliances actually work again? I think is what I was hoping that we could get. Out of this current administration. I was wondering if you could tell us what the EPA is up to and more.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. You know, since the 1970s and the energy crisis, the government has been trying to force appliance makers to make more efficient appliances. And all it's really done has been to make appliances more expensive and work less well. Everybody knows this, from your dishwasher, your washing machine, toilets, water fixtures, just everything. It's just been a disaster. Because this efficiency thing has just been ridiculous. And so the standards, gradually built up till things don't work, until Trump won. And during Trump 1.0, he rolled back a lot of these standards, including light bulbs, for example. And then when Biden replaced Trump in 2021, Biden reinstated the standards before, it actually made them worse. So President Trump announced last week that he was going to roll back all the Biden standards, which is great news. It means that manufacturers can once again make appliances that work, including incandescent light bulbs and dishwashers and washing machines, et cetera. But the problem is that we're going to have to find manufacturers that actually want to do that. You know, the reason that manufacturers have let the government get away with these efficiency standards is because they like them. And the reason they like them is because it makes appliances more expensive and they can charge more. They make these appliances in Asia, where labor costs are very low. So these people are making a lot more money now because, the cost of manufacturers has gone down, the cost of the product has gone up, and they love it, but we hate it. So bottom line is, great that the standards have been rolled back. We just need to find manufacturers that want to make appliances at work again.
I'm just wondering if maybe part of President Trump's efforts to reshore or to onshore manufacturing, if some of that may happen. And I know that there are certain classes of appliances, and one that I wanted to take a look at here, I don't know how deeply you've looked into this, is refrigeration and also heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. And one of the biggest challenges that when I talk to people in the industry is that they keep changing the refrigerant. And, first it was R12, then it was R22, then it was R440 or something like that. And it's like every few years they change the refrigerant, all about either energy efficiency and or it's going to do less damage to the ozone field every time. And it's like planned obsolescence of some of the most expensive appliances that we have, certainly heating and air conditioning systems and refrigerators. And refrigerators do not last nearly as long as some of the older ones using the older refrigerants.
Yeah, so, you know, the ozone depletion, the ozone hole hoax was the first atmospheric hoax and has never really panned out. The ozone is today the same as it was in the 90s when they started banning refrigerants like Freon. So we've gone from CFCs to HCFCs, make sure I get my letters right, to HFCs.
Okay.
And recently HFCs have been banned. And although there's no replacement chemical.
So we have nothing to replace it with, but we're going to just ban it. Okay. All right.
Ban it. So, yeah, and you're right. I mean, and these new refrigerants are a lot more expensive than Freon was. Freon was pretty cheap. You could recharge your car pretty cheaply. Your refrigerator's inexpensive, worked. And this is what I'm saying. All these federal programs to do whatever, energy efficiency, save the planet, they all just produce disaster because they're all junk science-based.
So is there any talk about taking the knee off of the heating and air conditioning world? Do you know?
I haven't seen anything yet. One problem is, this is really a deeply embedded problem in our society and our political class because, you know, the getting rid of the HFCs, that was part of a law signed by President Trump at the end of his first term.
Oh.
And supported by, you know, red state senators like John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy from Louisiana. And then during Biden, Cassidy and Kennedy helped sign the Kigali Treaty, which is an international treaty to phase out HFCs. So this is really a problem. I think President Trump, he would get rid of this if he thought about it. But he's got so much on his plate right now. And
it sounds to me like there would be political resistance to doing something like this.
The industry guys are going to be in there lobbying hard, and they own these red state politicians. It's like a lot of with the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, the Green New Scam, as President Trump calls it. The Biden administration spent a lot of that money in red states, and so they purchased all these red state politicians. So it's, it takes a lot of political will.
Now, on junkscience.com, you had mentioned that you called it the ozone hole hoax, and yet wasn't there a big treaty a number of years ago about getting rid of Freon and the chloral hydrocarbons, back then, that supposedly it appeared that it actually worked. And am I wrong about that? I am? Okay, tell me how. Normally we think, hey, they had a treaty and they got rid of all this stuff and, you know, they arrest people trying to bring Freon in from Mexico. You remember that story a few months ago.
Yeah, okay. So the treaty you're talking about is called the Montreal Protocol. It was signed by the U.S., I believe, during the George H.W. Bush, 1989. The treaty came out in 1987. The guy that did the science for it actually won a Nobel Prize for his science. But the problem is that, you know, so he determined in a laboratory and on the blackboard that chlorofluorocarbons in the atmosphere destroy ozone, right? But in reality, in the real atmosphere, the ozone quickly reforms.
Oh.
So does it really?
So this is another one of those issues in which I think the term that I would use almost as a pejorative is the best available science, which usually means politicized science that helps support a predetermined outcome, right? Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. The best available science at that time, which was modeling in essence, wasn't it? Because, you know,
modeling and half-baked modeling. If you go to Junk Science or go on my X feed and search for ozone hole hoax or ozone depletion hoax, I've got the most recent graph from NASA, and you can see that although we have eliminated CFCs and HFCs, HCFC, whatever, the whole alphabet soup.
Yeah, they keep changing the letters on them. I know.
Yeah, the ozone hole over the Antarctic has stayed the same. And, of course, you know, why is the hole only over the Antarctic? It just makes no sense. The whole thing was just crazy.
So the ozone hole over the Antarctic is still there, even though I was told that
Well, it's the same. It's not really a hole. It's just, you know, we don't really understand it. It changes every year, but there's no trend in the change. It's just, we don't understand it.
Oh, okay. Wait, you see, that's why I have you here, because here it is. I'm making the assumption that if they did the treaty and they did everything that the treaty said, that obviously the ozone hole was not a problem anymore. And you're telling me, no, that's not true. Okay, thank you.
Well, it never was a problem.
Uh-huh.
This is the thing. It never was a problem. You know, people were scared into thinking that, well, you know, the ozone protects us from ultraviolet rays. So
right.
People thought that there would be, like, people would be getting more skin cancer and, you know, plants would die. And
yeah,
we would all mutate into
zombies, you know, that kind of thing.
And none of that ever happened.
Oh. All right.
We don't really understand it.
What about the energy world, though? Because, like I said, you study this very deeply here. And are we finally at the death knell of wind energy, I would say, as maybe especially offshore wind? Or are we having – I know that there was a plan here in Southern Oregon, in Northern Oregon, rather, that got canceled for offshore wind, and it doesn't appear that it's penciling at this point. And what are you hearing out there? What are you seeing because of the changes?
Know, I think it's quite possible that we'll never see another offshore wind turbine, at least during the Trump administration, as long as Republicans are in charge. President Trump hates all wind, especially offshore wind, and because you know it's the most expensive form of electricity you can get. It's not environmental at all. Kills whales and eagles and birds and all kinds of things.
So is onshore is not as damaging as the offshore? Is that what I'm to understand here?
No. The onshore kills birds.
Okay.
Permanently destroys land. Offshore kills whales. Permanently destroys the ocean. The area where the wind farms are produces very, very expensive electricity intermittently. It's a disaster. It's not necessary. It has no purpose. And there's $1 trillion worth of spending in the Inflation Reduction Act for wind, solar, EVs, charging stations, all that kind of stuff, batteries. President Trump can't, end that. Maybe he can. He could just, I guess, treat it as fraud and not spend the money. Another way to do it is just to, slow down, delay these permits for offshore wind farms so that it becomes unattractive for investors.
That would be interesting. I received a pitch from an author who wanted to come on the show next week, and I wonder if I should talk to him and if you think that this is a reasonable thesis. He says that the electric automobile is an unavoidable, you cannot resist it, and it is going to continue to move forward. Do you think this young man is making a case in his book? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. Ford last year lost $17,000 per EV sold. They expect the same result for this year.
Mm-hmm.
How much longer can that go on? Now, China has figured out, with its essentially low-wage slave labor, it makes cheap EVs. They're trying to flood Europe with them. I'm sure they'd like to flood the U.S. with them. I don't see that, especially in the form of a mandate. I mean, I don't predict the future for most things. It's quite possible that one day electric cars will make sense, but right now they really don't. And to force them on people is wrong. And the government has no track record of selecting technologies, picking winners and losers.
Yeah, my concern has been, though, is that in spite of all this talk that, yep, you can't resist the electric car, and this is the future, this is where we're going, the grid, even as we're talking about, not to even mention all the talk about we ever going to need lots of power to power AI, AI server farms and this and that and the other. They're not able to keep reliable power on all the time, even, in our West Coast areas right now, because of we've closed coal fire plants.
Yeah.
And the challenge that we still make with wind and solar is that it only provides it when Mother Nature wishes to. And I don't know how they get past that serious flaw in the energy providing grid. What do you think?
So over the last 20 years, we've basically been dismantling our power grid, loading it up with unreliable and expensive wind and solar. And at the same time, we're, burdening it with electrification of everything from heat pumps to EVs, especially EVs.
Yeah.
And in crazy places like California, they want to electrify their ports.
Electrify, what could go wrong? What could go wrong on something like that?
Of course, they want to electrify trucks and cars, and the grid just can't support that. As it is right now, our grid operates on the edge. Anytime there's peak demand someplace, the grid becomes unstable. And, of course, President Trump, and we need to reindustrialize. We're going to need a lot more power. And
well, that also means we need power that's actually on all the time. Is base, you know, that is
reliable,
base load and stable.
And that power has got to go for, the data centers and for reindustrializing America and for, keeping us warm and cool and just, electricity for everything. And we don't need to be burdening the grid unnecessarily right now. It just doesn't make any sense.
Steve, what do you think about the future of nuclear? I hear some people talking about it. The West Coast states have tended to look really askance at this. And do you think that, maybe the real energy needs will break through the political resistance over time?
You guys have too many crazy leftists out there. Nuclear power is fine. It's great. Can be done safely. France is 75% nuclear. The first nuclear plant in the United States took 3 years from plans to producing electricity, 3 years. And that plant operated for like almost 40 years, no accidents or anything like that. And today, you couldn't plan a plant in 3 years or get it approved in 10 years.
Or much less get the investment capital for that reason, I guess.
Yeah, it's crazy. And these plants cost way more and they're way overbuilt because of, junk science EPA standards and politically determine safety standards going back from 70 years. I mean, it's a long story. It's the top story on junkscience.com right now. I've got some great, emails where EPA, people showing how politicized everything is when it comes to radiation and why we can't build nuclear power plants. It's the top story.
Yeah.
I've got it pinned there. It's so important.
Okay, we'll put it up there. I wanted to ask you then, going back to the changing appliance standards or, taking the regulatory boot off of the neck of manufacturers. Is there any push that you're aware of to make these changes permanent? Because the challenge with using executive orders to do a lot of those things, you get your pen and your phone, like Obama used to say, and you get some things done. But then the next administration can flip it back. And same with President Trump, too. And one of the challenges when you're talking about car manufacturers and appliance manufacturers, they're looking for steadiness, regulatory certainty, and they don't want to build for something just to have the next group come in and say, nope, you can't sell those anymore. See what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Well, recently, of course, car manufacturers have been looking for steady subsidies. Not regulatory.
Oh, that's the regulatory certainty they want, steady subsidies. Okay, yeah. Bailout. Okay, yeah, I get that.
Well,
sure.
Some things can be done through Congress and should be done through Congress. For example, the Inflation Reduction Act, that trillion-dollar beast that funds climate stuff, that was passed during the Biden administration through the budget reconciliation process. The Republicans could do the same thing. They could unpass it.
Okay.
And not subject to filibuster. Will they do that? Well, I don't know. Lots of Republicans have been purchased by money from the Green New scam. So we'll see. Yeah, Congress could do a lot, especially through budget reconciliation. Will they? Well, Democrats are not stupid. I mean, they spent a lot of money investing in Republican politicians. And so it's always hard to roll back the spending.
And you even see how the DOGE cuts that have been proposed. And they tend to be equal opportunity. It doesn't just cut blue states, cuts red states, too. So everybody's going to have to pay, so to speak.
Well, yeah. Bill, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, we are $36 trillion in debt. Government spending is 23%, almost one quarter of our GDP.
Man.
I mean, my God, everybody is on the federal teat. We have, this must be cut. We need a much smaller federal government. I mean, it's nuts. And thank God for DOGE.
And right. Well, I agree, too. I'm just hoping they're able to make it stick. That's all.
Yeah.
Steve, I appreciate the take on it. Follow him on X. I'll put all of your other information up there, too. I always appreciate the take on it. So guardedly optimistic. But for long term, though, it's going to take Congress. And that is a big question, right?
The other side's not going away. We got to fight.
OK. All right. Thank you, okay. Steve. Good talk, as always. Appreciate that. 656 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG. You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Living and loving the outdoors.
Finding cures, saving children.
Welcome to the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Join in at 770-5633, 770-KMED. And let me give just a quick email of the day. Email of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. And by the way, they have an in-house lab now, which I think you'll really enjoy. It's on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant. And with their in-house lab, a lot of times you can get your tooth prepped and have, you know, you just sit around for maybe about 20, 30 minutes while the machine in the lab starts getting things done, and you'll get a brand new crown that quickly, no longer having to wait to have it go out of town, okay? And to an out-of-town lab, which is the way that, you know, all the people used to have to work with. But at Central Point Family Dentistry, they'll get you in right away. And Patrick writes me this morning, because I was talking about the situation with Providence, and I had a listener who called in, didn't leave his phone number so I can get back to him, but saying that I had lied about Providence having been losing money hand over fist. And when I look at their financial statements here, that 10 out of 12 quarters, they had lost money providing medical care. And a lot of this due to low reimbursement rates, which a lot of doctors and hospitals are all having to deal with. Everyone's having to deal with the same sort of situation. They say something costs $100 and the state gives you $55 for something that they would say cost $100. That's about the reimbursement rate right now on Oregon Health Plan. And Medicare, not a lot better, you know, in some cases. And, you know, you have these big government insurers that are just trying, well, it's okay. It doesn't matter if you think it costs this much. We're saying we're going to pay you this much. And so this is where we, you know, find ourselves right now. And so Providence, like many hospitals, not really making money on their core mission, which is providing medical care. And they have to take it out of reserves. And investment income seems to be the one thing that saved them from their big savings account, so to speak. And then people were saying, well, because of that savings account, they just give it to the nurses. That's not the way it works. And Patrick says, Bill, like any other business, the wages have to be paid from income, not assets. That's a very good point. And that's kind of what I was getting at. I think you put it more succinctly. You pay it out of the income, and the income for providing medical care has not been all that steady and is not really covering everything, and Providence is having to subsidize that. Now, that doesn't mean that the nurses aren't going to get a raise. They're definitely going to get a raise. Heck, they were offered a $20,000, $30,000 raise, you know, earlier this year. But what they're really hoping to do is to have more hired so that it spreads the load. And I understand the nurses' point of view on this, but once again, there has to be money within, there has to be income coming in to be able to flush those expenses out, other than Providence digging itself into a deeper hole for the next quarter. Now, it has been improving a bit for them the last few quarters, but still, they overall lose money on providing medical care. So there we go. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass, Town Hall News Now. Dr. Robert Malone, MD, joins me in just a few.